The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
Okay, it's time for Winners and Sinners, where we look back at the week that was, but with a few twists. We're delighted to be joined by Today FM's Alison Curtis and Off the Ball's Cameron Hill. Cameron, I might go with you first. What's your winner of the week?
I think my winner of the week, it's going to be an eventual winner, I feel, is football, because the World Cup is coming up in the US, Mexico and Canada over the next couple of weeks, and I have a feeling it's going to be an unmitigated disaster. On multiple levels. It's too bloated. There's 48 teams.
Way too bloated.
So many teams. We're going to have a round of 32 for some reason, which will be utterly pointless. It's going to be the pollutingest World Cup because teams are flying literally from Mexico to Seattle and back for games and all across the US, fans as well. Some team members have struggled with visa issues. I think the South African assistant coach can't get into the country for the World Cup, and he's a key part of the staff. The intense heat that it's going to be played in, the fact that fans are being lied to with their tickets and being told that the tickets they bought for certain seats aren't the seats they're actually going to get. All of this with the gloss of the Infantino-Trump relationship, which is quite sickening in and of itself. And the great thing about it is, I feel like it's going to get to such a bad place that it'll be exactly what football needs, because everything's been leading up to this in football, and particularly FIFA. And they need some sort of a crisis like this to actually maybe effect some change.
So you think brand Infantino will be so damaged that it will mean change is inevitable? I hope you're right. Yeah. I'm not sure I share your confidence.
It's optimism, yeah.
You're wrong. Okay. And let me share you my views on football. I remember the run-up to Qatar, and everyone was so anti it, and they were like, it's run by slaves, it's so misogynistic, they hate gay people, it's awful on every level, it's too hot. And all of that was true. Mm-hmm. And yet still, when it starts, you get sucked into the joy of it and the tribalism and the nationalism and the you want your team to win. And even the likes of me, who is the least football-y person on the planet,
yeah,
kind of gets sucked into the stories and the everything. I think it's flawed and all as it is, and everything you've said is completely true. Mm. I think it's dare I can't find me saying this is weird, but it's bigger than that. There is a joy in football. It is the universal kind of most played game. The game of football is, if there was no other sport and there was still football, people would, it would almost be okay. Do you know what I mean? Because football is sort of that,
it's so universal,
international, yeah, thing. And I think we will ultimately, weirdly, forget all that when it happens and enjoy it and just settle into it.
I checked the fixtures in Toronto because I'm flying back on Monday. And thankfully, nothing's being played on the days I have to crisscross the top of the city. So okay, that was my big concern.
Yeah. I would agree with you on the football point, except for the fact that most of the games, at least in this part of the world, will be taking place at 2 to 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And that usually that's the opiate and the veneer that covers all this over. Because as you say, like, we remember Qatar for one of the greatest World Cup finals of all time, and not the various problematic issues.
Which were all true.
Completely.
And they were.
But the football masked that. Where the fact that we're going to have not only group games, but also round of 32 and last 16 games taking place in the middle of the night, it'll feel like it's kind of going on in the background, because no one's going to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch Curaçao, Scotland.
Or is it going to be an excuse for people to not go to work the next day?
Could be.
Maybe.
I think so.
The other issue, and I know exactly where you're coming from, Ciara, and I suspect ultimately you'd be proven correct.
Yeah, FIFA's like a cockroach.
But wake me up in 2 weeks' time, because the first couple of weeks, I'm looking at some of the opening fixtures: USA, Paraguay, Qatar against Switzerland, Brazil versus Morocco. I might watch, except it's on at 11 o'clock at night. Haiti versus Scotland. Australia versus Turkey. Germany versus how do you pronounce courage?
I've never got it right. Don't worry about it. Curaçao.
Like, there's a lot of dud games.
I think the buy-in might not happen till a little bit further into the tournament. I do think you're right in that too. We're all agreeing with each other. But I don't know.
Spain versus Cape Verde. What score is that going to be?
Exactly.
That could be 33-0. Any score.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. There's way too many teams.
Just this funny thing about the World Cup is even people like me who are not football people
get sucked in.
You do get sucked in. Yeah. You do, you know.
Like, the hosts usually drive that kind of atmosphere. Like, you think of the Vuvuzelas in 2010. And the colour that was in Brazil.
Yeah, they were really annoying.
Yeah, that was tough. But at least they got behind it. There was enthusiasm. Yeah, it might have been misplaced, but however. Yeah. But even American fans, because when the tickets came out and they were ridiculous prices, there were certain corners of America going, well, that's just a successful economy. That's how much things cost here. Suck it up. And now I heard...
Such charm.
Oh, really? And even the fans, like the diehard ultras, are saying 2,000 might be a bit steep. No. Even Trump was like, I don't know about this, Johnny. This seems like it's a little bit pricey.
Even Trump is saying it.
Alison, what's your winner?
Sesame Street, we all know it, we all love it, and it's gotten behind Pride. So it has in the last number of years done very public posts on their official channel, and this year it's the colours of all the characters to match the rainbow, just saying, you know, we welcome everybody into the community, and just very positive. Cue hate very quickly afterwards, but I just like how they are such a prominent brand on such a prominent, you know, platforms, and they were just embracing it. And they actually were big allies back, the first time was in 1981 when they covered a song that was like, we are all singing in the same voice, which is basically saying, you know, we're all the same on the inside and acceptance. So yeah, so of course people are now jumping to it saying it's, you know, sexualizing children, this is a children's show, why are we even bringing this into it? Whereas they're just saying, we want to include everybody.
I haven't seen much of this at all. And what are they doing specifically? I'm a big fan of Sesame Street.
Is Sesame Street still going? Yeah, and is it still on TV?
Yeah. All right, Public service broadcasting as well. So they, and they've always had a long history of LGBTQ plus hosts as well taking part, and just characters and same-sex family was introduced in 2021. So yeah, it's just very inclusive. So basically it is the colours of the rainbow. So it's all the characters and all the various colours.
And so the characters as in Elmo's red.
Yes,
and
yeah.
Somebody else, I don't can't
so they're holding hands together. Big Bird, yellow.
Yellow, Kermit's green, whatever.
They're holding hands together and it's making the Pride rainbow.
So, Oscar the Grouch is green too.
Yeah, it's
actually
cute.
I'm a big, huge fan. But big, huge fan since I was a kid.
Yeah. I learned a lot from it as a show, definitely. So my winner.
And the hate, the pushback, that's been...
Well, it was the Christian Post were quick in. They were first in on it. If you look up news, Sesame Street. But just a lot of conservatives, right-wing people just saying, listen, this is not necessary. It's a children's show. By bringing this into it and supporting Pride, you're sexualizing children. You're putting them at risk of exposure of these things that they shouldn't be exposed to at that age is basically the age-old argument that surfaces every June.
And has Sesame Street responded?
No, they haven't responded. No, they had their original post, and as of now, they hadn't. So, yeah.
I think that's probably the right way to do that, right? Is to just kind of let that air peter out and not respond to it. Like, I've always been struck about by how forward thinking Sesame Street is and how well they deal with issues that can be very challenging for kids. I hadn't seen it till about a year ago, the episode they did after 9/11, where there was a fire in one of the shops and Elmo was still trembling and the firefighters came in and dealt with it, but Elmo was still traumatized. And the lesson was, listen, things are going to be scary and scary things happen, but as long as you trust people who are in the know and know what they're doing, you'll be fine. I thought that was just so expertly done and so well calculated. It took a lot of time to think about that. Mm-hmm. But it was just the perfect response.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Well, look, Alison and Cameron, stay with us because we'll be back with Sinners in a moment.
And you're very welcome back to The Hard Shoulder. And we are still doing Winners and Sinners. And Alison, what is your sinner?
I suppose like Dublin City Centre and just the things have unfolded in the last number of weeks, just making it feel really, really unsafe. And I do know that this is a conversation that I've had with a lot of parents of children that are, you know, Jones in her circle. And I'm really uncomfortable with it. And where we live is a bus that takes her through a certain part of town. They seem to be really fond of this one restaurant on this one street that I'm, you know, maybe rightly or wrongly, I'm still nervous of because I have an association of certain parts of inner city Dublin when I moved here, not feeling particularly, you know, safe for everybody, not just, you know, people that aren't inhabiting in the area. So it's just kind of making me a bit edgy.
You live, like Shane, very close to the city centre.
Yeah.
Do you feel...
A change, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know if it's just like, I mean, I've always been nervous and anxious about everything anyway, so I don't think that's coming with age. But I think I'm seeing it through her eyes now. And I'm just thinking, like, even coping skills, like, you know, if something does happen, what are her coping skills and to get out of it safely or to help those around her? And just, I am forecasting it and I'm just like, could you just stay in the leafy burbs, basically, which is not the right way to approach
it. And is she nervous around?
No.
No, she's yeah, not a bother. Not at all, no. She's invincible.
Yeah. And like, it's time of day. It's all those kind of things to be clever about. And I do know that her group go into town a lot more than she does. And it's just not, I'm not comfortable if it's, you know, passing a certain time and there's only certain months of the year where it stays bright that they're still in town. So yeah, I mean, I track
her. She is young though too, isn't she?
She's only 15. Yeah.
Shane, you also like live between the canals. Do you think it's changed?
No, not particularly. I mean, I think certainly after COVID there was an issue and I think there are issues. I'm not papering over the cracks or whatever. There are issues. There are issues with antisocial behaviour. There's no doubt about that. And that needs to be addressed as issues with littering. And people say, well, what's litter got to do with it? I'm a big believer in the broken glass, broken window theory. You know, if the place looks like a dump, people are going to act accordingly. But this perception of Dublin city centre as a no-go area, I don't buy that. I really don't. It's not my experience of it. Crime rates year on year are down 9% across all the Dublin districts.
Knife crime, though?
Knife seizures are an issue, definitely. There has been an increase in them, and that is an issue that definitely needs to be addressed. And other cities have done this really well. Glasgow's done it. France have done it. And we do need some kind of program because we don't. There is a trend there, and we need to stop that trend before it. I mean, you see what London is like at the moment, and we do not want to go down that road. So look, there definitely are issues. There's
and for
no
young
question.
Young guys as well. So it's you know, obviously the news in the last number of weeks has involved young guys, and that's so. As a parent of a daughter, you've got your age old concerns there, but. Like, I know that a lot of her good friends are boys and their parents are really concerned about the other side of things.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and that's completely
valid, too.
I've
got boys and girls. Yeah. And they're young adults. So they do go out. They go out in town. They go out in the suburbs. They go out. And well, mind you, I go out in town, too. But I do worry about them. I do. But I think every urban setting, I think every city has issues. I don't think this is not a solely Dublin thing at all.
No.
And I think if, you know, cities have wonderful qualities too that, you know, including their nightlife, that you kind of want your kids to experience. But yeah, I don't know how you stop being nervous as a parent.
Yeah. It's really, and it's a challenge that I obviously will have to face, and I can't bubble wrap her and she has to live her life and we have to enjoy the city as it is a fabulous capital as
and
well.
And we can't cede the streets as well. We can't concede them to people who are ne'er-do-wells. I think that's really, really important. And what we need is more people coming into the city.
It can also happen anywhere. One of my kids did get assaulted and we had the guards and everything involved and it was by a gang and he was on the ground being kicked and all the things that you would be afraid of. And that happened in Monkstown, which is a leafy suburb.
Yeah, of course.
And it was just bad luck. He was walking along the street in the wrong time, in the wrong place, and bumped into the wrong bunch, you know?
And I think so much of it is relative. Like, I live in Terranure, where there's a heavy sort of Garda patrol presence constantly, which on the one hand was something we were calling out for a couple of years ago across the city, but I really don't think Terranure was the black spot for crime that maybe the amount of patrols suggests. You know, maybe crime has decreased by 100% in Terranure, but I don't think it was particularly high to begin with.
That's really interesting. So you would say Terranure has a noticeable police presence, where lots of parts of the city would say that why don't we have a police presence?
And I think that probably doesn't help in the fear of crime, because when you are coming from an area which is so heavily policed and then going to the city centre where, relatively speaking, there's not as much of a presence.
Except that I think that's changed in the last six months. I think there is a very visible Garda presence. If you walk down O'Connell Street at night, there you'll see, and it's not just one or two, like I've seen six or eight Gardaí together, including three or four huge lads, and you're just going, nobody's going to mess with them, basically. Yeah. So
I'm glad
think
that
has changed.
I have to say. Yeah. Like, I want a visible Garda presence. I like it in other cities when I'm abroad and you do see the cops walking around and everything. And I kind of want it here as well.
Look, we need to tackle dereliction. We need to tackle litter. We need to make Dublin a more attractive place to come into. There is a new vehicle there to do that.
As well.
And there is a plan, that task force plan, David McRedmond shared.
we have to act on it because we are definitely at a tipping point. I don't think it's a no-go area, but we need to be careful. We do.
We also need to ask Cameron what his sinner is.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to get any lighter, I'm afraid. So mine is the climate. So this week, the World Meteorological Organization said that El Nino is going to hit the world this year, leading to a rise in global temperatures. I don't think Ireland is going to be that badly affected, but Secretary General for the UN, Antonio Guterres, said this will fuel the fire of a warming world. I heard an interview with Dara O'Brien, the Minister for the Environment, this week, saying that we're not going to make our climate emission targets or carbon emission targets of reducing by 50% by 2030. We're not even nearly going to get that. And he conceded that and said there are challenges, but hey, not so bad in the sort of, you know, hey, your Dublin bus is half an hour late, but it turned up. That's still pretty good, right? And I remember there was a piece that you guys did a couple of weeks ago on biodegradable bags not being suitable for food waste because they don't degrade at the quick enough rate that will be suitable for compost. And there were pieces around that and things we can do and sort of moments where you go, okay, I should be more eco-friendly. On the week of the Blue Origin rocket blowing up in Florida, and we were in a production meeting that week and someone made the point that it's like, what's the point in all this recycling when these disasters are just undoing all that work? It's like when airlines like Ryanair were flying ghost flights during COVID just to save their slot in EU airports because of the way that system works. And I just felt, oh God, here I was recycling like an idiot for so long when all these emissions...
You can't give up.
I know you can't give up, but it makes it so hard.
Plaintive cry from Alison. And don't give up, Cameron.
When the Greens came as a government in 2020 and said we need to get more onshore wind resources and farms built because we need to get more renewables. And Dara O'Brien was saying, look, we haven't done that yet, but we're trying to get that on the road by 2030, as long as planning doesn't get in the way. In Ireland, as if the planning process isn't this incredible myriad of problems for anything that's built in this country. And I just felt very despondent about it, to be honest.
Yeah. I think many people would agree with you. And I think many people, when they look at climate and how we're dealing with it, would say you're 100% right. And I can't argue with any of that other than to say I kind of feel, for whatever reason, I'm always a glasses half full kind of person anyway. That's kind of how I operate in my head. But I think this is a problem that the whole world is struggling with. And I don't think that we are as laggardly, we're laggardly compared to some places for sure, but much less.
We're brutal, Kira.
We are brutal.
We are the laggards of Europe. Like, there's no, there
that's
is
the
no
laggards of Europe, though.
Yeah.
This is not a European problem. This is a global problem. Yeah. And we are not the
this
laggards.
This is the World Cup, though. We're talking about European championships.
But we're not laggards of the world. And I think this, I think we will get there. I actually do. I just believe that.
I hope
based
so
on,
as well.
Based on nothing.
I'm team Cameron on this one, yeah. I have to say. I'm with you on the gloom and doom.
Humans will... I actually think AI is a bigger threat to us at the moment than climate.
And we have
talked
about
humans
will
prevail. I think we will prevail.
This is mankind that brought us two world wars and in the 1960s nearly destroyed the planet with nuclear weapons.
But I'm not
so convinced.
But we didn't.
Yeah, but...
And we came out of all those world wars.
No, but we're not very good with... maybe better at dealing with immediate threats. We're not very good at dealing with threats that are coming down the line. We tend to...
Yeah. We long finger things. Yeah. And that's
I'm
human
not
nature.
Sure. I think long fingering is dangerous when it comes to global warming.
Yeah. I think we will be fine. I think we will find a way.
It's hard to conceptualize when there is a problem that you're like, I'm not going to be... selfishly, we're not going to be... alive for potentially. I mean, obviously, it is going to get worse in our lifetime. So I think that's where we all fall down.
You used a key word there.
Yeah.
Selfishly.
Yeah.
And I think that's ultimately all our problems. Yeah, it's not going to impact on us and our day-to-day lives.
I think that humans operate on the basis that immediate threats are worse than long-term threats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they operate on the basis of threats to them as individuals is
definitely
is something they take more seriously than kind of more esoteric.
Can we not evolve? Can we not evolve and use our intelligence to go,
actually, we have evolved to operate in that way that's how we've evolved and it's how we've stayed alive. But I still think that we will prevail. I genuinely think AI is a bigger threat.
So, yeah, the world will be fine. It'll just be covered in data centers powered AI.
I welcome our robot overlords on our fiery planet. I think we better take a break.
At this point. Alison and Cameron are staying with us back in a moment.
Okay, we're listening to Winners and Sinners. We've got Alison Curtis today, FM, and Cameron Hill of Off the Ball. For any other business, Alison, you've got a good one this
week. Yeah, and this, I think you'll get a reaction to this as well. Oh. So the reader's choice.
Did Kira say this? Just said it to me. It floated out of my head. Okay, welcome back. Alison Curtis of Today FM and Cameron Hill of Off the Ball are still with us. We are now going to move to any other business, and you've got a good one. We've been talking about it on the show already, Alison, but tell us more.
Everyone's going to have an opinion, which is good. So the New York Times Magazine, the Reader's Choice 100 Greatest Living American Songwriters. And we saw a lot of this throughout the last couple of weeks because they do long form interviews with the ones that were in the top 10. And yeah, it's an interesting list. I know, as you said, you've gone through it. In the top 10, there's two women, which is Dolly Parton, well, three, Taylor Swift and Carole King. Taylor Swift's in at seven. And at number one was Bob Dylan, and then Paul Simon, and who I would agree with very strongly is number three, Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, so, Billy Joel, five.
Stevie Wonder, six.
Taylor Swift, seven. Dolly Parton, eight. James Taylor, nine. And Willie Nelson, at 10.
Yeah. Can I offer a slightly controversial point of view, which I have offered already, and I just would love to hear your take, Alison, as a muso. Bob Dylan overrated?
I'm not. Oh. I know. Oh. I'm sorry. And
like
I'm
a
not
stake through my heart, Kira. Ouch.
A super fan, as you know, a lot of people are. He's undoubtedly had a huge impact on the scene of music writing and in general. But they get pitted against each other quite a bit. As a Boss fan, I've been seen as lesser than, and he's not as, you know, tactical in his songwriting, or as, you know, some would say argue creative, but I do
creative slash just an old git. Like Bob Dylan, I think part of his aura is the rudeness, the indifference to fans.
Yeah. That has nothing to do with his songwriting.
No, no, I disagree, Cameron. I actually think that's why he's rated, because there is a bunch of people that see that as his part of his genius.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think that actually, if he was a pleasant guy, I don't think Bob Dylan would have the reputation that he has.
But he wrote some of the greatest albums of his, like, that we've ever come across before he was 25, before that persona was carved in.
He's definitely
like a hard
genius,
rain's gonna fall,
definitely.
Blows
yeah,
you away
and
the
blood
first
in the tracks and all, and I get it, and I was a big fan in college, but with the benefit of time and look, like I would argue that Astral Weeks, written at 23 by Van Morrison, is a better album than anything that Bob Dylan has produced. Now, he's wanting this list because he's Irish.
Yes.
But to me, I think he's overrated. And I think
it's okay to have that opinion.
And so who would you have at number one?
Yeah, I mean, curmudgeon-y artist Van Morrison's up there.
Oh no, I know. And I can't argue with that. And that's part of maybe why he's perceived
number one. Thank you. Sorry, we should say as well, because I was giving out yards. I was saying, why isn't Brian Wilson on this? Marvin Gaye on this?
It's American Living.
It's Living.
Yeah.
I
did think it was interesting how few black artists were there. Like Marvin Gaye, obviously not alive, but there are so many incredible. Yeah. I don't know, and I'm not trying to.
I think Dylan is a worthy number one. I don't think you can have anyone else at number one personally.
I
But it comes down to taste as well. That's the whole thing. Like,
of course,
I was
it does.
Made fun of all the time. In my early 20s, I became a big Springsteen fan, and at that time, it was mostly reserved for guys in their 40s. And everyone's like, "Why do you like?" In amongst my Pixies and Sonic Youth and stuff. I'm glad Taylor Swift is as high as she is, and Dolly Parton is an incredible songwriter.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
is this Jolene? And I will always love you.
I'm not sure
of
Dolly
same
Parton
day.
Top 10 personally, but anyway.
I think she's got a little bit of a personality higher part to that, because she's so universally beloved too as a person, and that might help too.
I think Stevie Nicks deserves to be on that list somewhere.
Higher than 16.
I think Landslide is one of the all-time.
Definitely.
Did Stevie Nicks write Landslide?
Mm-hmm. It's funny the point
Patti Smith
black
is
artists.
There.
I love Patti Smith as a poet as well.
Yeah, she's incredible.
But because Carole King and Jerry Geffen wrote so many songs for Motown and black artists, I think the black artist thing is really interesting because it shows how black music is perceived over there. Like Carole King's written all those songs for Aretha Franklin and the Chiffons and so many of her favorite Motown classics as a white woman. And that's the type of, I feel, black music that a lot of people associate with that era, with Motown, even though it was written by two white people. I find that so interesting.
Really? Yeah. It is interesting. It is really interesting. It's a great list. It's been driving our text line all I'd afternoon so. With people with all, as we say, different tastes. Cameron, you're any other business?
Yeah, I thought I'd lighten it up after,
yeah, after
my
after your pessimism in the last section. You've gone all optimistic now.
I think the class of 2026, so my brother is doing his leaving cert. He had Matt's paper one, I think, today.
Yeah, and my daughter also doing it. I should shout out to Evian as well.
Definitely. And I had never been to
What's
my
brother's name?
Robin.
Robin.
He hopefully had a good day. I know he was nervous about it, but I went to his graduation a few weeks ago and I was struck by something that I hadn't been struck by since I was 18, of the kind of, like, being in my late 20s now, you get to the point where you're, how could you be optimistic about this world and what's coming down the tracks?
Wait, like, till you're 50s.
Like the climate and the prospect of a World Cup.
Jesus.
But you found hope.
I thought it's so great to see the enthusiasm and energy, and to see someone who's going into that world and probably knows a lot more about it than I would have at 18, given the exposure to
That's
things
true.
On social media and various other ills, and still having that optimism. I found that quite uplifting. And you look at a group like that and a collection of smart, intelligent people going into the world, and you don't know what they're going to produce. And I think that's a wonderful
thing.
This
is why I think it's all going to be okay. And I mean, I'm not being facetious. It really is. And I totally get what you mean when you go into school, because my kids' school, every year they do a school concert and they all get up and they do covers of songs you've all heard, millions of them. And regularly, I cry at the concert. By the way, none of my children have ever performed in this concert, so that's not why I'm crying. But I'm crying because I get such joy out of watching their youthful exuberance and optimism and sort of lust for life and talent. And I go, they're going to go out into the world and they're going to do all these things. And it's just, it fills my cup.
Yeah, definitely. And I love looking at my daughter and going, you don't know the pain of what it means to actually make dinner every night.
Yeah.
Just enjoy that time of your life.
You know what? The answer, my friend, is blowing in.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Shane.
We'll leave it there. Cameron Hill of Off the
All
Ball,
right, Mr.
Alison
Tambourine Man.
Curtis of Today FM. Thank you indeed for that. That's our lot for today.
That is our lot. It's the weekend. It's the freaking weekend, baby. I'm about to have me some fun.
Yeah, so we'll be back on Monday from 4 o'clock. Tuara, August Toga Bogey.
Have a great one, guys.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. With Kia. Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.